karuna, or compassion, is it's one of the grandest openings of the heart in the Dharma, because it's so linked to the essence of the Buddha's teachings in a different way, you might say. The Buddha said, I teach only two things, suffering and the end of suffering, and compassion is directed directly at this point. Compassion is a deep response of the heart to the suffering of others and ourselves, and the wish that this suffering ends, sometimes coupled with actions to help it end. So it's all about the end of suffering. And a difference between loving kindness and compassion is that compassion is more situational. It arises in response to suffering, whereas loving kindness is everything. It's the gift of good heart, wishing for the well-being of others, ourselves, just an outpouring of kindness, and the conditions don't matter in the same way. And a subtle point, and really kind of right at the heart of the path, like everything's, you keep saying it, everything's at the heart of the path, but is the distinction between pain and suffering. But it's really an important area, the distinction between pain and suffering, because the Buddha, he never promised the end of pain. He promised the end of suffering. And in fact, the Buddha himself experienced quite a bit of pain. He had a bad back, he had headaches, he had a cut foot, he had food poisoning, not to mention family problems, especially his cousin Devadatta, who tried to kill him several times and undermined him at every turn. So pain. Pain the Buddha had, suffering not. Pain the Buddha had, but he didn't suffer. And he consistently demonstrated compassion. So compassion is about a response to suffering within ourselves or within others, and it's a healing for suffering. So let's explore for a minute the conventional and ultimate aspects of suffering and what that means in terms of this exercise of compassion. You know, on a very human, very visceral level, human pain and suffering is deep and pervasive in our world. I mean, just look around. There's, you know, tens of thousands of people in refugee, millions, I guess, in refugee camps outside of Syria. There's political prisoners in North Korea. There's illegal immigrants in detention on our southern borders. So the list is virtually endless. And for folks in these kind of situations, any distinction between suffering and pain is, you know, probably would seem kind of specious and theoretical. And their situations cry out for some kind of compassionate response. And so in this conventional aspect of life, you know, our work, if we're called to act, needs to be to meet people where they are. And if we open our hearts, we may see something to do that'll make a difference. Maybe sending food or aid, we may be activists, whatever is compassionate to meet human need, or, well, the need of any beings, animals too. But on a more subtle level is ultimate compassion, which gets to the heart of this distinction between pain and suffering. So remember, the Buddha said he taught suffering and the end of suffering, but not pain, the end of pain, because pain happens. And the magic of the path is this path of mindfulness, is changing our relationship with pleasant and unpleasant, which is another way of saying pain, so that we suffer no more. Here's what the Buddha said. He said, whose mind is like rock, steady and unmoved, dispassionate for things that spark passion, unangered by things that spark anger. When one's mind is developed like this, from where can there come suffering and stress? So here he's touching on that which we grasp at, that which we push away. In either case, if we have this deep steadiness, from where can come suffering and stress? So this changes or informs the question of compassion profoundly, because once you realize that suffering and not suffering aren't related to pain or not pain, they have nothing not to do with the circumstance and everything to do with our attitude and our realization. That's where the suffering comes from. And then compassion, getting back to compassion, compassion is an opening of the heart and a response to the suffering of beings. And so it goes far deeper than whether those beings are in pain or not. It really goes into their attachment or not. And compassion arises out of deep empathy. It comes from an understanding that beings suffer due to being caught in attachment, aversion, and ignorance. And it's called the three poisons. And compassion is based on a wish and intention to help free beings from those three poisons, to help free beings. And the funny thing about suffering is it manifests in all kinds of ways, sometimes in the middle of what looks like human victory. As we open our hearts in compassion, you start to see through the illusion of accomplishment. You know, sometimes the most trapped and suffering people have the most worldly success, while the most peaceful and liberated have the least. So it's not about success, it's about suffering in an ultimate sense. And compassion is this grandest opening of the heart because it's so universal. And ultimately, compassion is a turning of the heart toward awakening for oneself and for others. Because as we look deeper, it becomes clear that awakening, this liberation of not clinging, that's the only fix for suffering. The only thing that ultimately helps people to not suffer is to awaken. And so anything that turns them towards this, that's compassion. That's the exercise of compassion. And the power of compassion is it doesn't shy away from what's difficult in the human heart, in the human condition, but embraces it. And compassion acts with wisdom, with an understanding that gives space for people to unfold, to emerge toward liberation in the way they need to, in the way that their unique path is. Teacher Deja Napier says, compassion lives in a wise resonance with the tender and painful aspects of the life. As the heart opens with acceptance, it becomes large enough to hold our existential suffering with increasing trust and respect. So it really brings us into this real universal caring, but with the idea, the understanding of freedom, ultimate freedom. So when we cultivate compassion, we reach toward each being equally with full and complete acceptance. And just by this acceptance, it gives each being space to be who they are, space for their journey, whatever it is, where they are. And it's just this acceptance, this compassion that holds open the door for all that we can become, for liberation for each being in their own unique journey. Think of what it would be like to sit with the Dalai Lama or alongside the Dalai Lama. You know, whatever suffering any one of us has, he sees it fully. And he sees the causes of the suffering fully and embraces each person fully. And, you know, in that circumstance with the Dalai Lama or someone like that, there is nothing you have to do or be to be accepted. And ultimately, it's just how you are right now. And his compassion also illuminates that any one of us, can be free from suffering and suggests the way forward. So compassion is really about moving forward. And so in this way, compassion's interconnected with the wisdom aspect. And as Lorna was talking about the compassion and wisdom aspects, and they all get interwoven. They're not like, you know, sort of succinctly separate. They all constantly are interwoven on the path. Because wisdom or insight, it reveals the impermanent nature, the empty nature of all things. If those things are physical characteristics or fleeting emotions or, you know, traumas that make us act in a certain way. Compassion gazes upon human circumstance with just that wisdom. Realizing that our suffering, however it manifests or is felt for any one of us, depends on our responses to conditions. That's what happens. It's situational. How do we respond to conditions? How do we respond in the world? And we suffer due to our attachment and aversion and ignorance in relationship to those conditions. But the good news is that this means that our suffering is ultimately changeable, because we don't have to respond in those ways. And the near enemy of compassion is pity. And these near enemies, they're always really instructive, because you can help clarify what one thing is by seeing what it isn't. So compassion contains within it this possibility of liberation, and says that any quality we have is not inherently us and is changeable. So we can't ultimately be stuck. But pity, it leads us away from liberation, in that it's based on a concretization of self and circumstance, a sense that one person with a better circumstance is looking down on another with a lesser situation. And just the nature of it, pity is kind of conditioned by this hierarchy of success. And those pitying are, and those being pitied are conditional, depending on the circumstance. If things are going well, you may be in the top, able to pity, but that can change in a moment. And the only solution for the person being pitied would to be raised up to the level of the pitier, to no longer be in difficulty or something like that. So it's not an ultimate understanding, but it's very, very conditional. But from a dharmic point of view, in terms of the realities of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, that's no solution at all. That pitying separation solution. So in our daily lives, this compassion can just really open up this great grace of heart. And while, just to clarify, just say it again, while loving kindness inspires goodwill and kindness towards being, compassion is a response to suffering. So it's unlocking the key of suffering. And the suffering, you know, doesn't necessarily mean an unfortunate life circumstance. This compassion could mean compassion for someone who's full of ego, compassion for someone who's expressing anger toward you or me, or compassion for someone who's focused so much of their attention on their physical beauty or their wealth that they cannot see the downfall in it. You know, some ridiculously wealthy person in Medina. I live on the east side, so I'm aware of these ridiculous communities like Medina, where it's one mansion after another. But, you know, you kind of have compassion because it's so dependent on all that hanging together. And it's kind of a trap, right? So it's not about conditions. It's about freedom. One Tibetan meditational deity, Yidams are called, Chenrezi, or Avalokiteshvara is the deity, the Yidam. It's often shown in a thousand armed form, which I love. It's this great, you've probably seen the Tanka, a great array of a thousand arms, each with an eye in the palm. And this kind of androgynous, but Chenrezi is looking out with compassion toward all beings, wanting to free all beings. It's just this extraordinary sense, so much caring that there have to be a thousand arms and a thousand eyes to do that. And the Buddha said much the same. He said, "Here, monks, a disciple dwells, pervading one direction with heart filled with compassion, likewise the second, the third, and the fourth direction. So above, below, and around, one dwells pervading the entire world, everywhere and equally, with heart filled with compassion, abundant, grown great, measureless, free from enmity, and free from distress." So conditioned, you know, flawed, I don't know if it's the right word, conditioned we may be, but we can still cultivate compassion in our daily lives in both ways, conventional and ultimate, that we've been exploring. And I found this practice to be transformational, because we may have felt separation from others or pain from what they may have done, political figures, you know, figures in power, but compassion can bring harmony and understanding, because you start to see what's driving people and you start to see the ignorance and the suffering that's going on even while they're dominating others. And it really unpacks that sense of distinction. Everything has a cause, and anger and resentment usually arise from fear, from suffering. So as we cultivate compassion for ourselves and for others, our sense of separation will diminish. So may compassion bring warmth to your lives and freedom.